Thank you very much. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will start with introductions. I'm Mike Havigan, the Chief Justice. By seniority on the court, we are going to next go to WebEx. Justice Miller-Lerman.
Justice Miller-Lerman, appearing and participating by WebEx. Good morning. Thank you, Chief.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy.
Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Pappick.
And John Freidenberg.
Thank you very much, everybody. Council, as you can see, Justice Miller-Lerman is appearing by WebEx. She can see and hear you, and she can answer questions of you. And you can probably see her best on that screen. While you are not presenting this morning, please keep your masks on. When you are arguing to the court, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand you. This is the case of Estate versus McGregor. Do either of you have questions before we begin?
Not from the appellate, Your Honor.
Not from the appellate.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stellick, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Mr. Chief Justice, the Justices of the Supreme Court, Counsel, may it please the Court. I represent the appellant, Alan McGregor, who's present today. This action was brought in the county court of Hays County by Mr. McGregor. Now, Mr. McGregor's mother, Evelyn McGregor, in 2011, which was 2 years after Alan's father, Clifford, died, had retained an attorney to prepare an agreement that was to modify the terms of the C.A. McGregor Trust. Now, the agreement was prepared at the insistence of Evelyn McGregor, and the agreement states that she wanted Mr. McGregor, her husband's, intent to be further, and that intent was to treat his children, his two children, Deborah and my client Alan, the same, and that that had not been accomplished in the trust agreement that had been prepared by an attorney from Ogallala.
At this point, was the trust irrevocable?
Yes, sir, it was. The trust was irrevocable at the time of Clifford's death, and when the estate plan was created, it was intended to create half interest in real estate in the Clifford McGregor Trust and half in the Evelyn McGregor Trust. They were created as revocable living trusts. Clifford's became irrevocable at the time of death.
So what's the consequence of irrevocable?
Well, it cannot be amended or modified unless it is done so pursuant to the terms of statute. And the probate code has a provision which deals with a private agreement among successors. And the trust code under section 30-3811 has a similar provision. And so when the agreement was prepared, Mr. McGregor signed it, intending to be bound and thinking that the other parties were bound as well. The other parties being his sister and his mother.
There's some indication that the mother revoked the agreement. Is there any authority within the agreement to have it be revoked?
No, there is none. That was attempted. I don't think there's any legal merit to the revocation filed by Evelyn McGregor. Okay. So when, much to our surprise, when we asked the court to approve this agreement, this non-judicial settlement agreement, much to our surprise, Evelyn McGregor objects to the characterization of this as a non-judicial settlement agreement and actually alleges that it's not even enforceable because there were necessary parties that were not joined. Now, the trust prepared by the Ogallala attorney has what are called carve-out trusts.
Are those similar to spendthrift trust or spendthrift provisions?
I think the intent was, although I don't believe there's a spendthrift clause in there, but it was intended to carve out, land And then that's what this is going to be, pretty much just real estate. Carve out the real estate. But the puzzling thing is, you if you want to make it a spendthrift trust, I don't think that you give a general power of appointment and the liberal distribution scheme that Mr. Clifford McGregor put in there. I think the vehicle to have that agreement have legal effect under 30-3811 is to allow those three people, the surviving spouse and the two children, to say, we agree under that statute to comply with Clifford McGregor's intent as enunciated by his wife, his surviving spouse. And if you look at the agreement, which is the first exhibit and actually attached to the complaint, it's fairly simple. Certain land is going to go to certain children. And does it make any provisions for the grandchildren who would be intended beneficiaries under the so-called carve-out trust? It does not make any provisions for them. And that's what Judge Payne, I think, at the county court level had trouble with. And I really approve this under Section 30-3811. Can I approve it as a settlement agreement without the joinder of Alan's children and Deborah's children? And I believe that you can if you read the there was a recent Supreme Court decision, the Llewellyn case, that is cited in my brief. And there are Section 30-3824 also has provisions which allows a parent to represent and bind a minor or unborn child.
That can happen. There's no conflict of interest. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is there a conflict of interest in this case? If you're taking part about trust that was going to be held in trust for the benefit of the deceased's children, and then go to who they appoint see that upon their death, and instead give that outright to the deceased's children. Is that a big conflict in that second group?
I don't believe so. If you look at 30-3822, it says notice to a person who may represent and bind another person under 3822 to 3826 has the same effect as if notice were given to that person. Now, it makes sense to me anyway that the intent of that statute is to say that an adult can give notice to their children, number one. And number two, if you give a power of appointment to Alan and Deborah, is there anything to say that they will appoint those assets to their children? No, certainly not.
Was it a general power of appointment?
I believe it's actually referred to as a limited power of appointment.
What effect does that have?
Well, it is a general power of appointment. They could appoint it to anybody except general creditors of their estate. That's really a federal estate tax provision. This estate wasn't large enough to file a federal estate tax return. But the question is, do you have to give notice to either a necessary or an indispensable party? And I believe in this particular instance, the children of Alan and the children of Deborah are not indispensable parties, and the court would have the discretion. And I believe that the court abused the discretion by saying you had to bring them into this agreement.
The court didn't dismiss this for lack of jurisdiction.
It did not.
So it's not an issue of indispensable versus necessary parties. We said if you have necessary parties, you can proceed. If you don't have indispensable parties, you lack jurisdiction. The court didn't make that decision.
It did not, no.
So really, it's an issue of were the interested parties part of the contract, the settlement agreement. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Right.
And your argument is that the children's children, were part of the agreement by representation of their parents.
Yes.
And again, what is your authority for that?
Well, it's a lot of it's common sense. Okay. And in this particular case, what takes it out of their indispensable
common sense?
Pardon?
Can we cite common sense?
No, sir. I assume it's understood. And I think the county court judge really hangs her hat on that limited issue.
Well, she says two issues. Is that correct?
Well, she
lack of interested parties, or material purpose being affected.
That's correct. You know, and also that there was a tract of land that was added to that agreement that wasn't even in. It was apparently by oversight or omission by the draftsman. The tract of land was not included, and so that was then included.
Does the removal of the carve-out trust go to a material purpose of the trust?
I don't believe so, and the reason is it's that limited power of attorney language in there that I think sort of minimizes that argument or that theory that you just espoused right there. We believe that the court should have approved this under section 30-3811. And I believe the reasons given by the county court judge are misplaced. For the reasons that, number one, a material purpose, the biggest material purpose that diminishes everything else is C.A. McGregor's intent, I want my children to be treated equally.
Can we tell that by the trust document?
Yes. The trust document actually has that language, and it is, of course, cited in the brief, and he specifically states that he wants the children to be treated equally. Excuse me. Another issue that I want to touch on briefly is the extensive testimony in the trial about the trustee, Evelyn McGregor's, taking all of the income, and that's not what she was allowed to do. I believe that the equalization paragraph would have had some merit because there would have been cash in the trust had Evelyn not taken all of the trust's income. She had one half of the income anyway from her own trust. She took all the income from her husband's trust. If that would have been retained, and had she not abused her discretion in treating herself so favorably, there would have been enough money in the trust to make that equalization payment that's referred to in paragraph 12.7.3 of the C.A. McGregor Trust.
Is that raised on appeal?
Yes. Thank you. I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bauman, good morning to you.
May it please the court. My name is Larry Bauman. I'm an attorney from North Platte, Nebraska, and the Kelly Scritchmeyer Law Firm. We represent Evelyn McGregor as a trustee. Quite frankly, the trust that C.A. McGregor came up with was pretty specific. One of the things that when we talk about making changes, amendments, making a change, when C.A. McGregor died, he very specifically said, this becomes irrevocable and cannot be amended or changed in any way. So one of the things that Judge Payne pointed out is that's a material change.
A material purpose.
Material purpose of that trust had already been established.
You said material change.
I'm sorry. But one of the things that the settlement document comes down, and if you just start with the fact that there was a piece of real estate that opposing counsel commented they forgot about. Did he? Or is that part of the residual clause of the trust? And quite frankly, it would have been taken care of through that. Second, the trust itself says all of this property will be given to Alan in trust, Deborah in trust, specifically says it. The settlement document changes that totally and says it's going to go to them in fee. They're going to get it. Quite frankly, I can't think of a more material change in that particular trust than that in and of itself.
Do I misunderstand the facts here that Evelyn initiated this settlement agreement and then changed her mind? Is it,
I think that's...
Does that have any relevance to what we're doing here?
Well, I don't think so. But I think your characterization of it is probably correct, because it was 2011 when they entered into this particular change. But as a practical matter, nothing was affected by that document between then and when the litigation was filed. And what she did is changed her mind. I think she can do that. Certainly most agreements, you can change your mind until there have been some material changes that have happened.
Does the agreement give you heading out? Is there any buyer's remorse paragraph? Is there any revocation? Or
don't believe I would say there was.
Let's assume the agreement, the attempted revocation of the agreement is ineffective. Where does that leave us? That's trial judge ultimately determined that the agreement was not enforceable. I guess what I'm getting at, I don't want to get sidetracked by this attempted revocation. Aren't we in the realm of whether the agreement to begin with was enforceable or not?
I believe so.
Okay.
And that's
what's your best argument that it was not enforceable?
I just don't think it's enforceable because it makes so many major changes in what the C.A. McGregor Trust actually specifically said.
What is the material purpose of the trust that you contend the agreement violates?
The original trust of C.A. McGregor specifically says that what we're going to do is this real estate will go to Alan McGregor in trust, and some additional real estate goes to Deborah in trust.
And after their deaths, what?
And after their deaths, there is the power of appointment, I think, that was pointed out earlier. But if that isn't exercised, then it goes down to their children.
And what's the scope of the power of appointment? To whom would it be appointed?
Could not give it to themselves. That was the limitation. Other than that, none.
So those are the terms, but how would you distill that into a material purpose?
Well, quite frankly, when C.A. McGregor puts together this trust, he assumedly, everything that he put in, that's exactly what he intended it to say. And in fact, even in the course of this, and one of the things that they talk about is, this being a reciprocal trust and that sort of thing. C.A. McGregor, in his trust, specifically says, this is not reciprocal. I know my wife is doing this at the same time, but this is not reciprocal. It is not in conjunction with each other. He said his was separate. And so I think he is speaking, basically from the grave, he is speaking as to what his intent is.
May I ask a question? I beg your pardon. Given Evelyn is a trustee, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Was there a term in the trust document for a limited power of appointment? And by that I mean, did it give the trustee, or arguably a certain beneficiary, but focusing on the powers of the trustee, was there a limited power of appointment by which the trustee could designate certain assets to go to certain beneficiaries and still be consistent with the overall purpose?
I think that, first off, be sure I understand your question, Your Honor. When you start talking about the trustee, Evelyn is the trustee of her trust and the C.A. McGregor Trust. And I don't think she had the power to give to anybody else. When she would pass away, then the two trusts were set up, one to Alan and one to Deb. And that was a trust. Those people were also trustees of the trusts that were set up.
And so during the time, I beg your pardon, is it fair to call this a skip a generation?
Probably could.
if it were a skip a generation trust, then prior to the beneficiaries coming into their own, I wanted to know about the range of things that could be done while the trust was in place. And then my question was there any term within that trust document that we would permit the people with power, whomever they may be, to designate certain assets? In other words, when there's a provision where you can designate certain assets, you are able to shuffle around the assets for different beneficiaries and still be consistent with the overall trust objective.
My reading of the trust of C.A. McGregor was that it went down to each of the kids and then they could make an appointment thereafter. It's a good question whether, in fact, they could split them up and say, this property goes to one child, this property goes to another child.
And then provide for an equalization. One kid gets all the land and the other kid gets all the things that are liquid to the extent they can make it equal. So you've designated land to one kid and you've designated liquid assets to another, and everybody comes out equally. Is there a way to do that within the trust document without making a subsequent agreement or amendments?
Well, I think that each of those trustees, I think, could probably do that
trustees. You don't mean everyone.
Pardon?
The child trustees.
Yes.
You're not talking about Evelyn.
No, we're past Evelyn, and we're... It's the trust that's established when Evelyn dies, and then the trust goes to Alan or to Deborah. And then I think those two people are the ones that have the right to make an appointment.
They have the right to use the income as assets during their lifetime and to use the income for the benefit of their children. Is that correct?
I think so.
But they're not entitled to the principal. Corpus of the trust, are they?
No.
But at their death, they have the right to appoint that to someone other than themselves.
I believe so.
And to be absolutely clear about this, from your perspective, during Evelyn's lifetime, and certainly 2011, when she and the children entered into this settlement agreement, the trust terms did not permit Evelyn or anyone else to shuffle things around.
Right. And when you say shuffle things around, I don't think she could take the assets. She would get the income.
And I think that focuses on the time frame that was the subject of my question, when Evelyn was in place prior to an attempted settlement, if any, did she have the limited power of appointment to designate assets? Thank you.
Okay. Did the trust initially contemplate that the assets were divided equally between son and daughter?
That's an interesting question. The C.A. McGregor Trust does indicate in there that, you know, to try to equalize it, but if it doesn't equalize, it's not equalized. That's where under the settlement document it made the comment, you then do an appraisal, find out if it's equal. Then what you can apparently do is make some movements of the assets to make them equal.
That's in the settlement agreement?
Pardon?
That's in the settlement agreement?
Yes.
In the trust originally, that wasn't it. Was it?
Right.
Trust agreement was each party gets certain pieces of real estate, permanent value, and if there's liquid assets, those liquid assets would be used to equalize the best possible.
Right.
But they couldn't do it. They just didn't.
Specific pieces of real estate were given to each of the kids. Then there was some additional items, personal property. Then what they went to on the equalization is whatever remained, if it did. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so that includes arguments in In re Estate of McGregor. Council, you are excused. Please, when you leave the courtroom, read by the side door to my left, and if all possible, continue to socially distance and use those masks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.